Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Saturday Morning Anime Podcast, where we leave the analysis to the professionals. I'm Trey, your air traffic controller for the evening.
And I'm Xavier, your thief on the midnight train.
Before we get started today, I want to remind everyone that this show is not for kids, even if our favorite shows are totally for kids.
So this episode, retreading old concept, but new ground. Very interesting. we're going to be doing anime endings in the same vein of our opening episodes. I don't think many people on this show.
There's like 14 or 15 of us.
Have picked anything in English. So, I mean, technically we could do an English version of this. Haha, that's content production.
Let's go. We could. So I picked my five series. I know what we're ending on. Xavier's going to go first. But before we do that, I have two things. One, we're going to talk about endings in general. And then two, Xavier needs to tell me what the theme of his endings were, because he texted me like 12 hours ago. I was like, I hate some of the endings that I chose, but it was for a theme. I had to do it to stay on theme, and he wouldn't tell me what it was. And it's been bugging me all day.
All right. So first, what makes a good / bad anime ending? Trey, go. What makes it?
So there's a lot of variety in endings, obviously, but there's like certain things that I really enjoy. It's just like not the biggest thing, but I like when like the opening part of the music for an ending like begins as stuff is still happening on screen for like thematic reasons, which happens in one of the ones I chose and one of the ones that you were debating that I told you to choose.
Do you like it when like stuff is still going on and like they mute the there's a word for it, like exogenic maybe, the sound going on within the episode? Like, do you like a silent with the ending in the background, or do you like the audio to still be playing? Like there's like a conversation or something happening.
I'm down for both. Generally, I tend to like where it's like mixed really well and you still have the audio going on, because oftentimes you can time like a musical cue to the delivery of an important line in like a monologue or a conversation. And it really like hits right as it throws you into like the cliffhanger and then the ending and then the song, whatever. One thing that I like is when in the context of a series, the tone of an ending like surprises me, but not in a way that feels wrong. Like, I'm not going to say like these, it's hard for me to point out like these are things that are just good in endings. It's easier for me to point out like ways that I think endings are used creatively. Like Attack on Titan, other than its one opening, has like a bunch of bombastic, like military march inspired rock and like metal tracks as openings that get you fucking pumped up, right? Yeah. Like half of its endings are like that too. And those are good tracks. I really like Linked Horizon. We've been over that before. But like the first Attack on Titan ending and the second one to a degree, they're a lot slower, right? And a lot of like, I like the way that it uses like visuals and music choices in an ending to contrast, but in a way that contrasts like things going on in this series, but in a way that is like additive, right? Like, yeah, brings a new dimension to like a very like high octane action series. You get this more like toned down look at characters, right? Or there's one ending that I didn't choose that I like a lot just because it goes fucking weird with it, you know. Is the one My Hero Academia ending where they're all in like medieval, traditional high fantasy garb and shit.
Yeah.
Stuff like that where like, yeah, it's cool to have your ending like be in tone, or it's cool to have your ending contrast and be like an additive experience to bring another dimension to what's going on in the series. But as we said in the opening episode, I like when they just get fucking weird with it. Yeah, for endings in general, though, I do like kind of helping me tone down or think about like what I saw in the episode. Like, I like when the music and visuals are like reflective at least in series that try and be more high concept than these are teenagers beating the shit out of each other, you know, which are also great. Don't get me wrong.
I'm about to say that's the highest concept. That's the holy grail of anime.
I was like, love that concept. It's great. I like when I get a good action-oriented opening, I get a good fucking episode, and then I get to calm down and chill or, like, just explore a different aspect of teenagers beating the ever-loving fuck out of each other. Great time. That's how a lot of us ended up here, you know. But yeah. I also like in traditionally, like, more thoughtful series, I really appreciate when the ending complements the series in a way where I can, like, be really reflective about the themes of the series. And I don't want to spoil my list, but I think I have specifically two really good examples of that in my five, because I have a pretty broad spectrum of stuff covered in my five, right? Like, I'm working with some really low-key stuff, some jazz stuff, just some fun rock and roll, you know. It's kind of all over the place because I'm not really beholden to this idea that, like, specific genres or tones are better for endings. I just,
no, if, like, it's not rock and roll, like, get it out. I'm just an opinion I've heard before. Yeah. I only want my anime openings and endings to be rock and roll.
I've heard people be like, it's got to be a banger, and I'm like, I don't know. I don't think every song needs to be a banger, because if every song's a banger, no song is a banger, right?
No, it's, no, it's just you got a lot of bangers.
Okay. It's important.
Just no mash.
God damn it. I knew that joke was coming. You're so predictable. But seriously, I don't think there's, like, a specific genre that's better for endings. I don't think there's a specific approach that's better for endings. I just want my ending to feel like it fits and to offer me an experience that complements what was going on in the show, which is different than in an opening where I want kind of an experience that prepares me for the show, I guess. That's the big overarching theme for me. Also, it is cool when they're very pretty, as it's always.
Yeah, that's
cool.
Fair.
I like when they're very pretty. There's one on that's not on my list. But the first ending to Mob Psycho 100 is, I believe it's the first ending, is like a stop motion of oil paint being moved around on glass done by a woman who went to UTokyo whose name I can't remember. That is just fucking gorgeous, and I couldn't tell you a single word from that song or what it sounds like, because every time I throw it on, I'm just mesmerized by how fucking gorgeous the oil paint on glass stop motion is.
That's fair. When I look at an ending, I mean, one, I usually want it to sound musically pleasant. If there's, like, a theme that stops it from sounding musically pleasant, I don't mind, but, like, they really gotta work to earn that, because, like, I feel like endings more than openings get ignored. I feel like a lot of people point out, oh, this anime has such a great opening. But I like to see how an anime ends. Like, what is that tone setter after the episode? So sometimes I don't like it to match. Sometimes I'm like, do you want to, like, beat me up with emotional shit and then bring me way back up? Like, what purpose is the closing serving? How are we closing? What's the message?
Absolutely.
Because some closings are just like clip shows, right?
Yeah.
The visuals and closings are a big thing, because you can either be really striking with it or really formulaic with it, which I think is also true in openings, but endings more so, because a lot of people don't stick around for the endings. So you can phone it in and people really won't notice. So you don't have to think about it as much.
That's fair. Some endings that aren't on my list that come to mind that, like, are really good about being visually creative other than that one are, like, like the Soul Eater ending.
It was just, yeah, the Soul Eater ending's really good.
Which is slow, but just has a bunch of style to it, you know? Or the Berserk 1995 ending, which...
That didn't happen.
Hey, no, wait, shut the fuck up. Berserk 1995 has a good ending. Actually, you stop it.
No, but that show didn't happen, so the ending didn't happen.
Okay. But the ending isn't like... there's not like a lot of animation or anything, but it almost kind of like puts you in this weird photographs of all of the characters like on a wall kind of feel that for some reason just meshes really well with the music being played, being aggressively fucking depressing and shit like that. So, like, I get it. I'm with you.
I like when they pull the, like, stuff is still happening but the music is still playing trick, but I don't like it being done in, like, every episode, I don't know. I think it's like an overused trick. It's a way to trick the audience member into listening to the closing, which is like, fine. Like, you've put in work. You deserve to pull that trick. But sometimes it's like excessive, especially if it's been like a reestablishment episode or like a slice of life episode in the show that incorporates those elements.
Absolutely. I do have a question because it comes back to that one series I was talking about that I think is on your list that does it really well. Because you got to use that trick sparingly, right? Like, if you're doing every episode, like, I'm not spoiling our lists, but I think the series we have, like, when we get later in the episode, we'll be able to explain that a little bit better. Because I have seen series where it's, like, 30 seconds before the episode ends every time they you hear that fucking piano riff, and you're like, all right, okay.
Okay, whatever.
Or, like, when credits get thrown up on screen, like, before stuff stops happening, but it happens every single episode. Like, that shit's unbearable. I'm with you.
And then one trick that I've only seen a few anime use, but I think is really cool, when you use the ending in the middle of the episode.
That's
like true. Background music. And then you don't use that all at the end.
That shit tears my heart out, because normally it's really sad stuff that does that.
Exactly. Like, you spend the entire season being like, I wonder why this ending's so sad. Nothing bad has really happened. And then you hit, like, that mid-season finale.
There's, like, a character. There's, like, that literally happens in one of the series I want to talk about later. So, like, I'm not going to bring it up. But, like, there's, like, a character death or something at, like, 15 minutes into the episode. And they play it. And then, like, the episode, when it ends, doesn't have the ending. It just has, like, the end of a somber monologue or, like, a scene of them standing at a grave or something and just cut to black. And you're fucking...
Or like, I think one of Code Geass's episodes, instead of playing the ending, it was just a picture of Lelouch anomaly.
I think that's right. Oh, fuck. No, yeah. I think, like, I feel like the general, like, thesis of what we've come to here is, like, you can do a lot of variety with endings, but it really comes down to how creatively you use it and how, like, you don't make it, like, overbearing as, like a crutch for emotional, response from your audience.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, like, I think a lot of it is delicacy, right? Because it is such an optional part of the viewing experience to so many people, especially in the age of streaming. There's a delicacy to what techniques you can draw people to. Because in a perfect world, your opening and ending, despite them recurring over and over again, should feel like a part of the episode. It shouldn't break up the flow of the show.
Absolutely. And I think there are obviously series that do this really well and really poorly. But like one series that I probably won't talk about again that I think does this super well is I feel like Steins Gate does this super well.
Yeah, Steins Gate does it good.
Steins Gate does this. Of like stuff I've watched recently, Steins Gate feels like it tonally it really uses its opening and ending to like keep you in the show.
A show that I was reminded of, let me see, I want to get the name exactly right. It's really old, well, it's an older show, released in 88 and 89. The manga was in 88 and 89. Anime adaptation, don't remember.
What show?
Oh, wait, no, the show was in 88, 89, and then it got a manga that ran through 90 to 95. So it's a really old show.
What the fuck is the show? Just tell me, dude.
Trey, do you remember On Demand? We're story time.
What do you mean, On Demand? Like, is that the name of the series?
No. Wait. Do you remember On Demand? Like, the cable feature On Demand?
Yes, I remember On Demand. Yeah. What, you're like a...
Dude, I don't know when you were outside. Anyway, so on Comcast On Demand, they used to put like old anime. This is how I watched the original Devilman. Right?
Oh, that's fucking sick.
That's what used to be on Comcast On Demand. There is very little separation between what anime could and couldn't be there.
That's so fucking based. I love that. Yeah.
So I watched a show called Vampire Princess Miu, which is a very fucked up horror anime about a vampire that does not look like a vampire. It's a very small girl in a kimono doing fucked up shit to dickish people. Right?
Okay. I'm with it.
And I distinctly remember the ending was so good at being a part of the storytelling. Don't remember what the ending was. Just made that impression of me. This was like a 4-episode OVA.
Oh my fucking god. I love it.
Ridiculous.
The worst part is I feel like in our like private conversations, we'll be sitting down like eating dinner or something. Like, you ever heard of this fucking vampire princess show? I had a crazy ED. Like, I feel like that's something you've said to me before. That's the worst part.
Oh, the two weird shows from my childhood that I bring up often, which isn't to say I don't bring up weird shows all the time.
All the time. Right? All the time.
Is this and UFO Ultramaiden Valkyrie, which is simultaneously best and worst magical girl show.
UFO Ultramaiden Valkyrie comes up so often that I've talked about it with other people now, even though I don't know shit about it. It's
come all up. My goddess for weirdos, and I love it. And that's saying "Oh my goddess," but for weirdos, I know is already an oxymoron because generally people view the people that like "Oh my goddess" as weird and like love Hina and shit.
This is some fucking energy that's happening right now. I'm very uncomfortable. But yeah, I don't know. Eventually,
I'm about to sidetrack this even more. No, in fact, I will. Do you know what makes UFO Ultramain Valkyrie weird? I don't feel like I've ever told you the proper like plot point that makes it strange.
I mean, I can't tell you to like not. So go for it.
These are alien magical girls, right? But when they fall in love, or at least when the main one falls in love. Right? That's when they can access their full magical girl powers. And what that means is turning from what is essentially a toddler, like someone in the body of a 5 to 7-year-old, to a full-grown adult instantly. And usually this is done by kissing the main character who she's in love with, who's like a high schooler.
I feel like we've talked about that before. Yeah.
It's fucking weird.
I hate
it. But the show's pretty decent.
It's like
a slice of life magical girl show.
I hate anime. All anime was a mistake. Every country was a mistake. I'm so sorry we do this podcast.
That and Chobits. Like, why did they let people watch that? Even though I like Chobits as well. But, like,
I saw
the vagina button to turn on.
I wanted to forget about Chobits, but now we're building continuity between our episodes. Remember last week how I said I went to a variety of stores looking for manga? Bro, these stores had so much Chobits. I don't know why. There was
You think that's weird? You think that's weird? Every Barnes & Nobles I've ever been to has multiple copies of every volume of Dance and the Vampire Bund, which means it must be popular.
Oh god, I saw that. I saw that at my local BNN literally a week ago too. Oh my god. Yeah, no, I hate print media. All of this is bad. Let's talk about music instead. I made you say you'd go first because I want to talk about the bestest anime of all time last.
So the theme of my list, right, is the endings to me that are most memorable, right? Ones that come to mind the moment I think of anime endings. Some of these endings are very bad to me.
Okay.
Some of these endings are good, decent to good, right? Mm-hmm. But come from shows I hate.
Mm-hmm. And you better end this off by saying, because I saw your list, some of these endings are incredible from incredible series.
I'm still not sure that the incredible endings have even made it in, right? This might just turn into Xavier's meme corner, where I tell you about all the horrible shows and endings that I've listened to.
If you didn't bring the one singular one I wanted you to bring, because I left it off my list because I thought you would, I'm going to be fucking furious.
Anyway, so we're going to start this out in the wonderful world of a recently finished seasonal anime, and I believe the manga is over as well. Shokugeki no Soma, Food Wars. Ending 2, Sachan no Sexy Curry, or Sachan Sexy Curry. Trey, are you familiar with this song?
I watched it one time in preparation of the episode because it was on your list.
This song is sung in a voice that I can only describe as prepubescent screeching. No disrespect to Seiko Mori. And, like, it's supposed to sound that way, like, in my head. Like, if you look at the lyrics, which I will, like, read, because it's a very short song, it's supposed to sound that way. But it just sounds so whiny and grating, and I hate it, that it's just become a meme to scream it at the top of my lungs, like, if it comes on in my car, because I do have it on my phone because of how much I hate it.
Okay. Can I have
like, a- I just... All right, so skipping the first stanza, because the first stanza just sets up things. This is only like a 4-stanza song, and then there's the chorus. And the chorus just repeats. All right. We played with the same toys separately. Days of gaining experience, points, and leveling up. I even achieved my own unique finishing move, but I'm still unable to fight. Don't grow up, Sachan. Don't dye your hair brown, Sachan. Don't get a boyfriend, Sachan. My precious, my precious. The potatoes have vanished, Sachan. The pork belly is all over the place, Sachan. And the onions. Don't cry, Sachan. Just be the strongest. My precious. And then, in the most off-kilter, screeching singing voice that I've ever heard in a Japanese medium, sexy curry over again. Or more accurately, sexy curry. And that's it just does that till the fucking episode ends.
Yeah, it does.
I think what makes it worse is the visuals, which is like all of the characters being sort of happy-go-lucky and chilling out and being very whimsical. Great visuals.
Yeah. So I watched this once. I'm not caught up to Food Wars. I can say I can literally hear it already. I can hear the fucking chorus in my brain, and
yeah, it's such an earworm. You want to forget, but you can't.
I see. I hate your list because I had such great songs stuck in my head all day, and I know after this recording, I'm gonna get in bed and just start fucking hearing the curry over and over again in my head and just cry. And I'm gonna Snapchat you angrily. But I do think the visuals are good. I enjoyed watching this. I did not enjoy experiencing it because I didn't enjoy listening to it, but I did enjoy watching it.
You know, it's a great comparison, like OP to ED comparison of this.
Sure.
OP that I like that does this style of singing well. Golden Time Lover from Full Metal Alchemist. This is like a way worse version of that.
Yeah, but that's because like Tsukima Switch is such a good fucking band and Golden Time Rubber is so fucking good.
But it's like that off-kilter, like fast-paced style of singing, but with a way, way more like grating voice.
Yeah, no, the voice is way more grating. I thinking about it more, I think that is a fair comparison. Like that's a really reasonable comparison to make. But that comparison makes me sad because of how much I enjoy Golden Time Lover and did not enjoy listening to the song that you made me listen to.
And I'm almost like 100% sure this is on purpose, right? Mind you. But God fucking damn it.
So the lyrics, right?
Sachan is not a character, no. No. Nope.
So they're not.
That's very funny.
It's not like a character singing to another character, like in canon. Like it's not a.
Like no, Sachan's no, not. I don't believe so. From what I remember about Food Wars, that's not even anybody's like nickname.
Oh God, I don't know what I'm supposed to say to that. I was like hopeful, right? Because you were in the lyrics, and I was like, oh, okay. It's like two childhood friend characters and one singing to the other about their past and how they should grow up and on yada 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 whatever, and that. Out the fucking window. Absolutely not. God forbid someone give Trey hope.
Like I will double check, like right on the fly. I'm gonna put in Sachan Food Wars, and I'm pretty sure all I'm gonna get is endings. Yeah, even on Reddit, someone has asked the question, who is Sachan in Sachan No Sex Curry? All right. And people, the only answer that people have is that it might be now Sadatsuka, who is a character in the show, who's the girl mixing the big pot at the end.
Yeah.
But, like,
even
while she is one of the, like, the enemy characters, she's not very prominent, right? So it would be weird for the ending to be about her, and yet you know nothing about this character. It fits her so well. Well, it doesn't fit her. It fits how she feels about other characters in the show.
Okay. I mean, at least it's got that going for it, which is at least a, I'll give it credit for that. And I'll also give it credit for its visuals. But I don't love the lyrics. They're all right. I really did not like the chorus, and I don't like how it's going to be stuck in my brain for like the next week. And I've still not been convinced to watch or read Food Wars. So, haha. That's all I got.
You know, that's completely fair. Food Wars as an acquired taste, no pun intended. But that, yeah, no, we can move on to yours. I just needed to make sure to get that in there. Very memorable song.
Time for
Will Stay With Me Forever.
This is where I put in my everyone go watch Yakitate Japan, which is the better food shonen. Have fun, love you. But my first ending is an ending that does the get used in an episode thing really well, and an ending that has a lot of history behind it, and an ending that makes my heart hurt, and an ending that changes every time you listen to it, which is, it's hard to list who it's by, because technically it's by Claire, and technically it's by Yoko Takahashi, and technically it's by like the main cast of the show, and also technically it was written in 1954 by Bart Howard, but it's Fly Me to the Moon from Neon Genesis Evangelion, you know?
Yeah.
Which is a series I'm rewatching right now. And I didn't, like, I realized how important this series was and how important this song was to this series, right, on my multiple viewings of it. But I decided for the ease of my watch, I wanted to watch it on a big TV that I have in my house, or bigger than my laptop screen, at least, you know? And I don't have the right cable to hook my laptop up to it, so I got to stream it on Netflix. And Netflix didn't get the rights to Fly Me to the Moon for its Evangelion streaming rights.
If I would imagine it are expensive as fuck.
Oh, probably. Fly Me to the Moon. Oh, yeah. Well, here's the thing. I think I'm only at like episode 16, but it really detracts from the experience not having
Fly Me
to the Moon at the end of the series.
Many, many things distract from the Netflix Evangelion experience. So, like, honestly, I'm not even surprised at this point.
Oh, yeah, no. Like, the scene, I believe, in which Fly Me to the Moon is used in the middle of the series will just not be there, which means it's going to hit less hard. We all know they changed lines literally during the congratulations scene and during a very important romantic scene near the end of the series. But, like, not having Fly Me to the Moon fucking hurts. Especially with the fact that like it changes across the series, right? Because sometimes it's sung by like one person really solemnly, sometimes there's no instrumental, sometimes it's just the instrumental, sometimes it's sung by literally like the voice actresses for Rei and Asuka. And every time you listen to Fly Me to the Moon in the series, it's like it feels a little different, and it keeps you on edge about what you're going to get at the end of the episode, and it still manages to always feel right at the end of the episode. The visuals are
also every episode of Evangelion after like two or three proceeds to be like, okay, but how can we run them over with a different train this time?
Oh yeah, no, Eva gets really sad after very early on in this, because we'll talk about Eva hopefully soon, because I really, really like it. And we could talk about Eva the rest of this episode, but we're not going to do that. But Fly Me to the Moon fucking hurts. I will say I love all of the covers to it, right? I think every version is good, right? And it's super iconic, like just Fly Me to the Moon. Oh god, it feels bad to read these lyrics and not sing them, but I can't sing. Let me play among the stars. Let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words, baby, kiss me. There's the first half of the whole song. It was originally called In Other Words when Bart Howard wrote it so fucking long ago. And what's going on in Eva is a bunch of stuff. And to avoid spending 20 minutes talking about Eva, I'm just going to say.
Okay, so you've got an Eve seed, or a Lilith seed, and an Adam seed. And what these do is repopulate planets through intergalactic angel sex. And you're probably wondering, you mean two intergalactic beings have sex? No, it's much more like plant cross-pollination. Okay, you can go.
There's this very funny, depressed boy who doesn't understand what it means to exist, and that's okay.
Because he's like 13.
Yeah, of course. I couldn't expect him to. And there's this first, second, and third children and giant robots that might be people. Who knows? But while stuff is happening in Ava, when I was talking about like reflect on the episode, right? In the opening section, Fly Me to the Moon was the one I wanted to say first. There's a second one, which we'll get to. But Fly Me to the Moon, like just sitting there and listening to it, and just sort of looking at the very like simple visuals, right, of Fly Me to the Moon, and just sort of thinking about what I'm watching, especially in like the last third, was always a really important part of the experience for me, and it wouldn't feel the same like if that wasn't there, for me at least.
I think that's entirely fair, and I do like the trick of constantly redoing the cover. I do wonder what you think about anime using not real music, because oftentimes anime endings are just like studio songs, but like things like covers of other music as their endings, like JoJo has been known to do, like Eva has done, among others.
If it fits right, I think it can be really good. Like, the examples you just said are really great ones. Like, I think Fly Me to the Moon, or in other words, is an incredible example of using this song. I think the use of Roundabout in Phantom Blood, but specifically Walk Like an Egyptian in Stardust Crusaders, it really does add to the experience.
Have you ever walked like an Egyptian, Trey? Among the Dunes?
I refuse to comment. On my ability to walk like an Egyptian, but
why is that, Trey? Is it because you're a Yacubian?
It's not my place to attempt to walk like the Egyptians. I'm content walking the way that I walk, but I will enjoy and support everyone's right to walk like an Egyptian. But I was gonna say Roundabout, right, as a song that is from the band's called Yes, I believe, and it became a huge fucking meme with the "to be continued." That feels like a great way that the ending is used really creatively to always like lead into the next episode, you know? Love that.
Yeah.
But generally, if it's used respectfully and it's chosen like correctly, and the piece they're using or the cover of it like really fits the series, I think it can be used to a really, really strong effect for making the series better. And I think that's what's happening in Ava.
And on the topic of Roundabout, if for some reason you have jumped into this podcast on this episode, go watch the entire previous episode to hear fun trivia facts about Roundabout.
Excuse me?
Because remember, I talked about the origin of Roundabout.
Oh, yeah. Wait, did that happen in the manga episode or the JoJo's episode? Was that two episodes ago? That's my question was.
Ah, well, you're just going to have to listen to both.
Oh, yeah, I got...
Sorry.
Audience retention, baby. Let's go. But yeah, I could sit here and talk about Ava forever, and we're going to do that soon. Oh, just you wait. But for now, you got anything you want to say about Fly Me to the Moon? It just feels right for like the mental states of the characters and the mental state of someone watching Ava, especially for the first time. I feel like it's an integral part of the experience to like listen to Fly Me to the Moon and think about what you just watched. Especially when you get past like those first 7 to 8 episodes where it's like more, a little bit more Monster of the Week-y with the different angels. Yeah. You know?
So I think that the use of Fly Me to the Moon and Ava is a great lesson of death of the author, right? Because in the words of the creators of Ava, I just think it sounds cool.
Absolutely.
Because I do truly think they were storyboarding out Ava, and they were just like, this is secretly about space angels. Fly me to the moon. But I do think that as people, we're really good at meaning-making, even if we do it accidentally because of the emotions we attach to songs. And I think that's what using this particular cover does for Ava. They weren't really going for like high concept, I don't believe. I think they were just like, this feels right, kind of, right?
And it does. Like, don't get their geniuses, it fits.
So I think that's the like simple beauty in using Fly Me to the Moon is that, what's the word? Almost like it's like an accidental stumble into genius. Like it's the ultimate act of instinct, you know?
Yeah. Well, I will say I expect
or intuition.
I expect nothing else from the studio that named themselves Giant Robot with cool letter after it, which is Gainax. But yeah. It's there's a lot of stuff they've said about how they just sort of thought shit was rad, and it annoys me that they're like, yeah, this feels right, and I still am like, every time I hear the correct version of Fly Me to the Moon, I want to fucking cry, you know?
Yeah.
Which is saying a lot, because they like over all of the films, I looked this fact up, which I've not seen all of them, but over all the films and all of the episodes and all the shit, there's 31 different versions of this song used at some point during the canon events and canon material of
that poor budget.
31 fucking versions of Fly Me to the Moon. So like at the very least, they're like, this song is really good. They're trying to say something with all these fucking versions of it, but like, I'm with you. Death of the Author, all that jazz. We all know Hideaki Anno it's fucking Hideaki Anno. I don't know what you want me to say.
All right, so for my second pick, I'm going to pick a show that for a long time, I consider like my Judas Iscariot, my traitorous branding.
Yes.
Like, literally one of the shows that infuriates me the most.
Oh, God.
Ending 4 for Gundam Seed Destiny. Easily, I believe, the worst Gundam series in existence. Like, the worst. Like, in whole disappointment. Should never have been made. Gundam Seed, the prequel series to it.
How bad are we talking? I've never seen Gundam Seed Destiny.
Oh, it's bad. Okay. Weird Gundam history lesson, because you have to understand how much I hate this series to understand how I could still love this ending.
Do you love this?
Because the ending is good. No, the ending is really good.
Okay.
The series is god awful.
I didn't
watch. In fact, the only thing better about getting to the end of an episode of Gundam Seed Destiny, other than it being over, was this ending.
Okay. Sell me on this ending. Don't sell me on Gundam Seed Destiny. I don't have time in my record. Right. I don't have time in my schedule right now for bad
anime. Oh, don't watch it. This is one totally skippable. So Gundam Seed, the series that preceded Gundam Seed Destiny, was like a return to form where they did essentially the plot of the original Gundam, but way worse, with new characters in what was known as the Cosmic Era instead of the Universal Century. Tons of homages and straight-up stolen plot points from the original Gundam, but done worse with a less likable cast, specifically Kira Jesus Yamato.
Okay, is this the main Amuro character? Is the Amuro
yes, the much worse, much less likable Amuro Ray.
That's annoying. I love Amuro Ray.
This man literally survives a nuclear explosion with no explanation at all, and we're just supposed to be like, okay, which is where the name Jesus Yamato comes from.
Is he in like a Gundam? Is he in a mobile
suit? Yes, he is in a Gundam. He is in his mobile suit, which is powered by a nuclear reactor. The preceding scene is literally a, I believe, beam saber, but it could be a physical sword, going through the cockpit, and then a nuclear explosion happened. Okay. And they're like, nah, Kira's fine.
Okay.
And then he gets a shiny new one. And they also recycle a bunch of animation, and it becomes nothing but beam spam. Like, the entire show is nothing but beam spam.
That's a big depression. I don't appreciate it.
Perhaps the only strength of this terrible show, though.
Okay.
Yeah?
Okay, hit me with it.
Is the relationship in the original, and to a degree Seed Destiny, although Seed Destiny like shits all over this, right? Between three characters, Kigali Yula Atha,
okay,
Athrin Zala,
okay,
and the aforementioned piece of shit, Kira Yamato. Right?
Who are they analogs to? Is it Amuro Ray, Char Aznable, and either Char's sister or that one other new type they meet?
You could do Kigali as like a combination of the two.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
Because there's also another character central to this named Laxus Klein, who trades off these roles with Kigali.
Okay, okay.
That said, a lot of Seed Destiny is spent trying to replicate this relationship with another character named Shin and his love interest, right?
Okay.
So the name of this ending, ending number 4, is Kimi wa Boku Neteru. You are similar to me.
Oh, okay.
Lyrics for the first couple of stanzas. I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's actually like a fully done song.
Okay.
Right? Your appearance resembles mine as your silent cries echo within your heart. They say ignorance is bliss, but I don't think I'll be content with it. Even on those nights stretched out across emptiness, I only want to live in the present chosen by me. That's all. Your speed resembles mine, and the sky where breaks no longer work. Will I be all right as long as I persist? The two of us can end this if we try. Like every Gundam series, Gundam Seed Destiny tries to do an end of warfare world peace story.
Yeah.
And this is reflected in characters who have endured the same kinds of trauma, and the older characters from the original series trying to guide the new characters through this trauma. Now, while this isn't done particularly well because the cast isn't all that likable, the message is still strong. And the ending carries this message a lot, because the ending does what the character writing doesn't. Highlights how similar these characters are, and also highlights the beauty of simply realizing that an opposing soldier is similar to you in more ways than you might know. This is especially true in Gundam combat, which is, despite being essentially giant robot fights, is really, when you break it down, a one-on-one duel where you are having a very personal interaction with an enemy pilot.
The lyrics of that song, right, about these similarities and like flying through the sky and all that shit, it has like the same energy as those stories you hear of like during like the world wars in like trench combat, when like Christmas will happen and the people get out of both trenches and play a game of soccer, or like
it is exactly like that,
like same energy as like the story of the guy who would sing every single night, and then one night he didn't sing and people from like the opposing army came across like the fucking central line to bring him medicine, you know, like same exact vibe, which I fucking love.
Which is the vibe that Seed Destiny tries to create with a lot of its characters. And then the moment, like, it seems like they're getting somewhere, shits all over whatever it was previously doing, right?
Big sad.
It even takes the moments from Seed that did it right, and Seed was not particularly good, but it was, like, middle of the road, and shits all over the previous moments. Like how Atherin, despite ending Seed, finally being able to understand Kira's dream and deciding that he's going to work at it from the space colony point of view, which is called Zaft in this era, the cosmic era, instead of Zeon.
Okay.
And eventually even decides to help Kigali work on it in the Earth Federation, and ends up going back to Zaft and resetting all of their relationships again, shitting over all of that character group. Right?
Yeah. That sucks.
Also, You Are Similar to Me is a beautiful song. Right? In general, beautifully orchestrated, beautifully sung, operatic, and feel amazing. Right? I get excited every time I hear it. Gundam Seed Destiny also had good openings, mind you, but the music might be the only, for me, redeeming quality of Gundam Seed Destiny, because every time I see something in it I like, the show writers find a way to ruin it.
Sweet. Love that for them.
So that's why it's memorable, because I'd be like, oh god, we finally at least got to the...
Look, fuck like half of Gundam, and then like the other half of Gundam has some of the best shit ever. That is all I will say. Hell yeah, is that all you got?
Yeah.
Okay. The next one's gonna be a fun one to talk about. It's Memoria by like Aoi Ear, I believe is how you pronounce that. The first ending to Fate Zero. And you and I both like Fate Zero a lot. You forced me to watch
it. I love Fate so much. I don't know what it is with me in long-running media with, like, disturbingly complex or, like, annoyingly convoluted plots, but, like, Good to the last drop.
You wake up in the morning and you're like, I understand all the Evangelion movies. I've beaten Kingdom Hearts 3 backwards, upside down, all that shit. Yeah.
You don't want the episode where I explain the plot, biblical referencing, and symbology? Is that the word? I always forget. Symbolism. And symbology, I believe, is a word. I don't know
if that's a word.
Live podcast, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm not the humanities man.
We're
gonna go symbology.
But I could talk about Kingdom Hearts all day. I could talk to you about Fate all day. But yes, Fate Zero, very good. Love it.
The first ending of Fate Zero, hey guys, Fate. It's crazy. It's very wacky. It's about people who can do magecraft, but not magic. That's a different thing. Summoning grand heroes from both fiction and also real history to fight in a big war to get the Holy Grail so you can make a big magic wish. And it's always like 7 people, except for that time where it's 14. And
except for that time when it's 14.
And in Fate Zero, the people who are summoned are all historical figures, I think. I think they're all, other than maybe one, which is questionable. Actually, wait, kind of historical figures, kind of not. There's a lot of shit going on in Fate Zero, but like...
Wait. Who are you saying is not a historical figure?
I'm saying, like, not that they're not a historical figure, but that we don't really, like, know, like, its exact individual will be, like, the Thousand Faces song.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, that was the one.
You don't have to know.
Yeah,
like...
I know.
Who it is. It's weird, especially because you can summon multiple Hassans. Like, you can... Hassan's a title, right?
Yeah. And then, like, the one in Fate Zero's magic power is that there's even multiple versions of that. Whole shit. But this ending, just sounds really great. It's an excellent performance by this band that I already named earlier. And the song is all about memories and shit. The opening lines are, within my soundlessly flowing memory from long ago, if I could think about you while cuddling up to my recollections, with your sinking face reflected on that window I was so familiar with, your eyes, cold enough to swallow even the sound of tears, were facing it tomorrow. It's this whole song about fate. It's this song about your past and memories. It's a song about looking forward and understanding how the future and the past work together, which is very relevant to a story about trying to change the future by summoning people from the past to fight for you, right? But the thing I love the most about it is that the visuals of this ending are just... it's like an opening thing with like CG statues that look fine. But then it's... the credits play over still images of the 7 like heroes that have been summoned based off of famous historical art pieces about those heroes. So the first one is Iskandar the Conqueror, Alexander the Great, whatever. And the lineup and like the way the character is drawn in that image is like a near copy of one of the most famous paintings of Alexander the Great. Or the way that Gilgamesh is sitting in his throne next to a lion in his mimics a variety of statues of Gilgamesh sidling up next to and holding a lion.
Minus the like blonde haired, red eyed thing.
Yeah.
That's not in the statue.
Yeah, the statues are, they're brown statues of a guy holding a lion. Okay. Like
they're dreads.
They're so fucking old. Yes. And hard to believe, The Mesopotamian man was not a brown hair, blonde hair, red eyed hot boy who wears streetwear. But then there's like the Lancelot one. Spoiler, fuck, shit. The Lancelot one.
Can I make a side note real quick, though?
Yeah.
Weird side note, not related to your spoiler. In Fate Grand Order Babylon, right, when they get to the Babylonians are brown. Gilgamesh just is.
God damn it. Okay, look, at least he's got drip. He's got that at least. The Lancelot one is based off a famous fucking drawing of Lancelot standing next to the lake. The King Arthur one where Arturia is killing Mordred in like a battlefield. The posing is based off a famous painting or drawing of Arthur killing Mordred. The thousand-faced Hassan one is him sitting on a horse looking at a mask like from behind, and the outfit he's wearing is like direct, and like the position he's sitting on this horse directly mirrors drawings of the thousand-faced Hassan. And then the last one is, I can't remember if it's Cucullin or Diarmuid who's in Fate Zero, but I think it's Diarmuid.
It's Diarmuid in Fate Zero.
It's Diarmuid.
Because we can only have Lancers from Ireland. Ireland.
Ireland only got good Lancers, though. They got the good Lancers. They got the Lancers on deck.
This is also the only studio that knows how Lances work.
Oh, we'll get to that. We're going to do a Fate Zero episode. But Diarmuid's like standing next to a tree looking at another character sitting in the tree, and there's like a famous historical Irish drawing of Diarmuid standing next to this tree looking at this girl sitting in this tree. And like the memory idea and this like acknowledgement of the real history of these characters, as well as like the acknowledgement of the themes of the series dealing with moving forward and like what it means to be a hero and all this stuff, all just kind of comes together when you think about the ending being a modern interpretation of famous representations of these heroes, just like how the whole series is doing that. And it's just really fucking cool. That's literally it. It just makes my little history nerd heart, which is only there a little bit because I'm only like a minor history nerd, just really happy.
I will say, as a big history nerd, the Diarmuid two spears thing is like, well, no, this is important, right?
Yeah.
That and the love spot, because his foster father was the god of love. Honestly, like, good on Fate for like that attention to detail, because in his legend, Diarmuid does wield two spears, Gebjud and Gedierg, which literally just mean yellow spear and red spear, which inflict wounds that can't be healed. Like, that's the curse on both of them, which is what they do in the show. So I really enjoyed that, and it's supposed to be a mirror to the enemy of Diarmuid's story, who has two swords.
Cool. Thank you for that extra bit of history. Do you know what the tree spot is in that piece of art? Because I didn't look into that, because that's not very serious at all.
The tree is where Diarmuid dies, basically.
Okay.
Because Diarmuid is pursued because, who was it? What was her name? Basically, someone who wasn't supposed to, might have been a princess, falls in love with him because of the love spot. And then he runs away with her because they're in like this weird love triangle.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that like character is who is referenced in this artwork, and then is this referenced in the ending, and it's very fucking cool shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know if you want to say any other things about the Fate Zero ending. I just wanted to list that off because I was going through endings today and I remembered how fucking sick that one is. And the fact that I like the song, it totally like fits well. And like it's one of those things where in the ending keeps me thinking about some of the like implications of the series and like what it's trying to say through this use of art and history and new media and whatever.
And unlike Ava, Fate is made with a goddamn fine-tooth comb. So this may have been intentional.
I think this was intentional, like completely. Yeah. No, this is some good shit. I think now we do Anime News Corner, and then we got three left each, right?
We gotta blaze through these. We spent too much time.
Two of mine are quick, one's gonna take a fucking minute, so we'll end on that one. Hey everybody, welcome to the Anime News Corner. We're at 53 minutes into the show. We have three things to cover today, I guess. The first one is just, hey guys, Aggretsuko is getting another season, and that is very cool.
Aggretsuko is good. Just haven't watched it.
I've seen season one. I haven't seen two, three, or four, but I've heard great things. The second thing we have to talk about is media sales in Japan, because Demon Slayer did some fucking wild shit this week.
Just the manga. Well, the manga did some wild shit, but also the movie has done some wild shit.
Because the movie is now the highest selling film in like Japanese history, right?
Yeah, no, it has done perhaps the unthinkable, what was long thought to be impossible. and knocked Miyazaki off the throne and taken the number one spot, and incidentally pushed your name to number three.
God, dude. Spirited Away being in second place just doesn't feel right in my soul, but also I haven't seen this Demon Slayer movie, and we all know Ufotable could like own us as legal property. I don't care, they can do whatever they fucking want.
And again, as we mentioned previously, right, the author is not, I don't think, being fairly compensated for how well this movie the amount of money.
I'm gonna read the top 10 series and their sales numbers,
And this is Fran, is it the one I sent you earlier?
Yes, I'll read it to you.
This is franchises in Japan in different mediums. The top two are both manga sales.
Yeah,
important.
Number 10 is manga. It's The Promised Neverland with like 3.6 billion money units. Because there's not a thing on here, and my brain blanked on what they're called. I'm so sorry.
Just say sales. That's the terminology.
Estimated sales. I don't know if it's numbers. I don't know how they're calculating this. If it's like a conversion to a certain current, whatever. I don't know. The Idolmaster series music, 3.6, but a little higher. My Hero Academia, the anime, 3.7, like billion. Hypnosis Mike Division Rap Battle, 4.3 billion. Jujutsu Kaisen, the manga, at 4.5. Love Live, the music, at 4.6. Kingdom, the manga, at 4.7. Haikyuu, the manga, at 4.989. One Piece, basically 5 billion. One Piece, 5.5 billion. And then Kimetsu no Yaiba dwarfing One Piece by a quantity of 10 with 54.1 billion. It sold like 10 times more than fucking One Piece. Holy shit, that is all.
I don't know how this author is going to continue to write manga. They seem like a very shy person. No one knows what they look like. They're a very emotional person, which is not a bad thing, right? I'm bringing this up because they're very invested in their work. Like, they saw episode 19, the episode that trended on Twitter, and took to their Twitter to thank the studio for rendering the episode in such a way, because they literally watched it 2 or 3 times and cried just over and over again.
And now this author has outsold fucking One Piece by a factor of 10 in 2020.
And de-seated Miyazaki's masterwork Spirited Away. So I can only imagine what like their day must look like when they wake up.
Shit. I couldn't imagine.
I don't know if you can even revel in this, or if you're just like, now what do I do? Because I believe Kimetsu no Yaiba, Demon Slayer, may have been their shonen debut.
I'm pretty sure it was a serialized series. What the fuck do you do now? Well, you not only are you a household name, you became like the most household name.
Like, yeah, Koyaharu Gotouge.
Oh my god. More power to them. Holy shit.
As of December 2020, Demon Slayer as a franchise has estimated to generate total sales of 270 billion yen, which is $2.6 billion.
Holy shit.
This is not, like, for people who don't understand, like, how much money it's made in such a short time. This manga came out in 2016.
Yeah.
It was only 23 volumes long.
It ran, like, 200 chapters, something like that. Like, nothing.
Yeah.
But yeah, congrats to them. And now the last part of news. I was out on a walk with my dog today, and I audibly cheered because Xavier texted me a YouTube link to the Shaman King trailer. And oh, fuck, is it looking so good. This is the Shaman King that I wanted when I was a kid, and I like the Shaman King anime from the 90s or 2000, whatever. But this shit's looking so good. It's looking super clean. The voice work sounds great. All the effects work looks so good. And I'm just the Oversold looks like. I'm just so excited.
They have recolored everything to be manga perfect, because in the original series it was not like the same coloring as the manga, which happens sometimes.
Yo, looks so good, dude. I'm so psyched. This is like maybe the property, well, the competing with the fact that Record of Ragnarok now has a fucking anime coming out in 2021, even though literally like a week ago we said that's never gonna happen, and then the day after we recorded that episode they were like, haha, that's cute, and it dropped not even 24 hours after we recorded that, they're like, here's the trailer. But with Shaman King and Record of Ragnarok getting anime, I'm so just psyched for 2021 now, like holy shit.
Also, I looked into the mangaka for Demon Slayer. Demon Slayer is their first serialized work, and previously they had 3 or 4 one-shots published, none of which won prizes in the issues they appeared. And Demon Slayer is loosely based on the first work they ever got published in Jump, which was a 45-page one-shot.
Jeez. Anxiety. This is like some...
I could only feel anxiety. I hope that they're like reveling in this. I really do. But also, I know like this would create such anxiety in me.
For longtime fans, this creates the same anxiety in me as like someone telling me that I had access to D-mail from Steins Gate. It's over. I can't.
But I hope that they're continuing to work and they're able to overcome that and come back with something even better. Absolutely. Because for 205 chapters, holy shit, Demon Slayer was great.
Mm-hmm. On that note, I want to thank everyone for listening and staying with us. This has been a rambly episode, but I'm really excited about it. I'm enjoying it. I want to thank all the people who make cool stuff for me to enjoy, media-wise. I want to thank all of our delightful listeners. We've been gaining more Twitter followers, which is cool. Love that. You can see me retweet when Xavier says weird shit and or Sakuga gifs, you know?
Said weird shit lately?
Remember like a week ago?
I don't pay attention to my Twitter.
A week ago you were like, I'm just going to start posting weirder thoughts because like I give you guys too much freedom. So you're getting attacked now. And every day you've been saying weird shit. Not that it's bad, but like sometimes it's really great. But yeah, I hope you're enjoying the show so far as much as we enjoy making it. We'd really appreciate it if you'd give it to a friend you think might have a good time, or give us a shout out on Twitter or something. We don't do any advertising and we don't plan on it. We like that it's a small little deal where we can just have a great time and be ourselves. Thank you all so much for the love and support. Our @ on Twitter is @satanimepod. Our email and other links to contact us are in there if you have any questions or want to just hit us up. Other than that, we'll do our like real big list of thank yous at the end, but we should be good to get back to the episode.
Wait, before that, to give you guys an extra incentive to follow me on Twitter, I retweeted, this is one of the weird things, I retweeted a VR game where you can fight your dad during his prime, and my quote tweet was, I definitely lose because my dad did boxing, but it'd be a fun time, throw in the Yu-Gi-Oh! Real-time pain sensors for hard mode.
Your Twitter makes me so happy and so mad, because it's just like retweeting our artist and then like all your weird brain thoughts, like that shit, and your media takes, like on the Wonder Woman thing, which you guys have to go follow on Twitter to see how we felt about that. Haha. There you go. Audience retention. But I think it's your turn, because we got half an hour or so to get through six.
All right, time to blaze through this.
Look, two of mine are really short, and one of mine is going to take 5+ minutes.
All right. Next, we're going to do meh, but still memorable, because it was the first time, this is going to be very disappointing to people. It was the first time I, like, noticed Japanese hip-hop in anime. What I mean by this isn't hip-hop in anime, but Japan has its own style of rap music and hip-hop that you don't see a lot, because they Americanize it, like, a lot, or Westernize it, I guess, because, like, there's some UK elements. So on and so forth. Hitman Reborn, a series that is near and dear to my heart, ending 6, Stand Up, is just like a really good J-hip-hop track. And really from left field for what Hitman Reborn is. I think that perhaps the strength of Hitman Reborn and all its openings and endings is that they really focus on youth, because Hitman Reborn is about high school characters, and it started off as a slice of life comedy, which later became a pretty good battle series. I will put that out there. I think it was a pretty good battle series. So, you know, yeah, this is a nice surprise and just memorable. I will say that I did not originally remember what it was called, but I remember the sound. So, you know.
That's okay. I don't think
also Hitman Reborn had a lot of English in it, like as far as like the songs, which I always thought was cool.
Yeah. First of all, I don't think you need to remember the name of a track for it to like really stick and still matter, because I had to double check some names on these. So I think it's completely fair. I regret to inform you that I still have not read Hitman Reborn. I've been doing a lot of reading and a lot of watching of animes and mangas and such over this here fine break. But that is not something I'm willing to jump into yet, because what? It's like, it's so long, right?
Hitman Reborn?
Yeah, isn't it?
It's like 300 or 400, maybe.
That's pretty big when I've been reading 50 to 80 chapter short shit. Right? This is a task.
It's like 300 or 400. It's not even that much.
But yeah, is it? So the memorable element for you is just the fact that, like, admittedly, right? Well, earlier we talked about how I think almost any musical genre could work for an ending, right? Even just for soundtracks in general, you don't get a lot of J-hip hop, right?
Yeah. You get it as part of a J-rock track.
Yeah. And like for me, right, I'm not sure if this is like I don't think this is like a normie like take or anything, or like this is like the most obvious shit. My first like experience with real like any sort of I guess not super westernized hip hop was through like some of the soundtrack to Samurai Champloo, you know? Which doesn't have as much as like some series, and at times isn't even like the best example of it. But I did
Yeah, that's what I mean when like a lot of it takes like Western influences.
It does, which is a thing that Watanabe is known for, right? So when I listened to this, which I did listen to earlier today, I liked it a lot. Like it's not the kind of thing where for me it's gonna be memorable forever, right? Because I haven't had that experience with it. But it was just kind of a great J-hip hop track. Because like for me it was like, okay, here's this pretty Western kind of J-hip hop, Samurai Champloo shit, which I almost put that ending on my list but didn't. It's ending, not even its opening's a hip hop track. Its ending isn't. But J-hip hop's pretty rare. Like that was the thing I was trying to say. It's not super common in a lot of like anime soundtracks or just stuff that we experience in general. Like sometimes to go get the good stuff, you really got to hunt it out. Because these, as much as we don't want them to, endings have like a themes to still lean towards pop tracks, piano ballads, and rock tracks, right?
Yeah, because they're easy to get emotion out of. Admittedly, right? Yeah. That's part of it.
Like for a lot of audiences, they can probably relate to those kind of like those genres and feelings better than they can relate to like a J-hip hop track. So like I totally understand how this could be like a memorable first experience for you. Totally with it, especially like just because stuff that doesn't fit like the normal genre and feel of endings just pops out, you know?
Yeah. All right. Again, interest of time, let's go.
Okay, this one's just fun and a song that I like to sing. And it's Hokage Tea Time or Afternoon School Tea Time. And specifically the lead singer, Yoko Hikasa, singing Don't Say Lazy, which is the first K-On! Ending. Everyone who has been a longtime listener knows that K-On! Is very good and a personal favorite. And the albums are they're fun fucking music. I like that the voice actresses in K-On! Sing and make a lot of the music for the series. It's great. Helps with immersion. Super good. It also, you know, doesn't hurt that they're all really gifted musicians and deliver some excellent performances and great shit. And Don't Say Lazy, for me, is a song that, like, for the beginning of K-On!, It ends every episode on a high note. That's all it does. It ends every episode on a hype fucking note. Because, you know, it's a slice of life series about girls who start a band in their school. And oftentimes the series is more just about the girls doing their stuff and not always the music. And that's a good thing. But it's an ending like this that just sort of, like, helps you remember, like, the core of K-On!, which is good character work in writing, acting, and animation, and good-ass music work, and how all of it comes together to make a good product. Like, hearing this song performed like this helps sell you on the idea of the series as a whole, and it helps sell you on the fact that, like, this is a believable band making believable good music. And it all just kind of, like, helps to build immersion, basically.
There you go. Definitely agree. It's just one of those endings that fits, right? Like, it doesn't do any fancy tricks or anything like that. It just fits. And it's good. And it does what it's supposed to. Probably, like, the least weird one we've talked about so far, honestly.
Yeah, no, it's a great J-rock / J-pop track by a really good band for a really good series with really good animation. This is, of the stuff on my list, the most, like, by the book, one of the two most by the books we made, like, an ending theme, themes that we have here. It's just such a great example. Like, I have this in more than one playlist that I drive around in, or drive around while listening to, even, like, walking. And this is the kind of song where, like, I'm never not in the mood to just, like, think about K-On! A little bit and sing this fucking good song and just feel some joy, you know?
Yeah.
Which is what K-On! Is for me. Like, the fact that I can do that with this music is, like, that's the same thing I can do with K-On! I can just throw it on, and it's like a comfort show that's just about how cool it is to be alive, have friends, and follow your fucking dreams, man. K-On! Go. All right. Take your next turn. Go run.
All right. You ready? You ready for this? Show that not many people who are newer anime fans, and even, like, anime fans in general, because it's sort of a weird show, haven't seen an action fantasy kind of magical girl rom-com called My Hime. You ever seen My Hime, Trey?
I've not, but you've talked about My Hime before.
So My Hime, basically, in not so many words, is a series about a bunch of girls at a high school called Fuka Academy, who can, like, materialize cool weapons. And when they fall in love, they have what's called a child, which is a giant robot fight companion.
Nice.
Doesn't always look like a robot. In fact, most of them look like animals and such. But they're still really cool.
All right.
And they're fighting these things called orphans, which are basically also giant robot, oftentimes animals.
Okay.
Also, there's this really cool mechanic. I'll waste a minute saying this, where if the object of their love dies, the child dies too. It's very interesting.
I'm looking up concept art for this series and art from this series, and this shit looks awesome.
It's a cool design show.
Yeah, no, all these children, I guess that's the plural of that, look so cool. This is dope.
Alright, so the ending is Kimi ga Soradata, You Were My Sky. And for a series that I would say is like 80% romantic comedy about these girls having, like, really complex and sometimes, like, for themselves at least, embarrassing feelings or, like, really deep plot points about how they feel about the people that they're in love with. Just a perfect, like, love ballad. Sounds like a 90s R&B ballad, that kind of thing.
Hell yeah.
I just really enjoy it. I'm going to gush about the show with the rest of the time instead of you doing lyrics.
Go.
To encourage people to watch My Hime. Part of what it does so complex when it comes to love and why doing something like an R&B ballad just works, especially something with the title and chorus, You Were My Sky. For instance, there's a character who comes from a family of ninja and pretends to be a boy at school because, you know, she basically comes from a male-dominated family and she wants to keep her identity secret as well. And follows that sort of throwing away your womanhood kind of trope in Japanese media. So she wears breast binders and slowly starts to fall in love with her roommate slash classmate, who's the main character Mai's younger brother. I believe his name is Koken, though Koken might also be a character from Ikitosen, so don't quote me on that.
I know you get many things confused with Ikitosen. It's a part of your soul at this point.
That said, so she falls in love with him, but she can't express it. But it's only once she's able to admit that she is in love that the child is born, right? So she has a weapon, and she is a Hime, which is what the people with the potential to do this are called. But she can't summon her child till she comes to grips with her feelings. So that kind of thing.
Dope. Living for it. Is that all you have to say on my Hime?
Yes. Okay. This is good. It has all the things I like.
Hell yeah. My next one is the other, like, really by-the-books ending. And even then, I'm not sold on it being that. But it's the best Hunter x Hunter ending, because I had to get in, like, one obvious long-running shonen shit in here. Hunting for Your Dream by, like, Galnerius from Hunter x Hunter 2011, which is the Heaven's Arena and York New City arc ending theme, which is a banging rock track with a really awesome and unique sounding vocal performance that I like a lot. But this is the series that I think does the best example of the music coming in while the series, or while the like stuff is still happening on screen, right? Because like the beginning of it is like guitars and drums and shit coming in and like laying down some musics before there's like this big build-up crescendo, and then there's like a big bang, and then the vocals come in. And what the series will do during York News specifically, and like once or twice during the Heaven's Arena arc, and then like maybe like five times during the whole like fucking 30 plus episodes of York New, will like in the episodes that are most tense and they want to pack in the most content, they'll have like the instrumental come in as like a last character is doing, as like a character is doing their like last action or finishing a monologue or like ending a conversation or whatever. And then it'll cut to the visuals of the ending right at that bang when the vocals come in, which like avoids the trap of like lyrics getting in the way of dialogue delivery, because they'll just mix it well enough to put the just like this this banging track behind actions happening on screen. And I'm not gonna do the read the lyrics thing because we're pushing late on time, but it has visuals of like every member of the Phantom Troop. And my favorite part is that the opening part of this ending shows every character next to what they desire, the dream they are hunting for in Hunting for Your Dream, you know? So it shows like Gon and his dad, and it shows Killua and Gon, I believe, because his whole point is he wants to be Gon's friend. It shows Kurapika, and then like the the Phantom Troop spider logo, and then it shows Leorio and like a desk covered in schoolwork because he wants to be a fucking rich boy doctor. And then it shows a bunch of other stuff just introducing characters, and it generally has this visual theme of like continuing like the idea of hunting, which is the whole series, but playing a banging rock track, being used creatively to push good moments, and having a visual style of this is what people are hunting for, and it all just kind of meshes together to be like, this sure is a great shonen ending that has music that matches the tone of the arc that we're in.
Yeah, I mean, this is another one where it's like, this one just sort of fits, but I like all the little tricks they do to keep it interesting. And I think Hunter x Hunter in general, despite my own personal gripes with like things that happen in Hunter x Hunter, both in the writing and in the way the show is just composed, is really good at pulling off these little tricks to really sell you on things happening in the episodes or concepts of artistic license.
Yeah, it's moments like how that one episode ends with like Kurapika dashing down an alleyway while the others like pretend that Kurapika was never there, or like when Hisoka walks off from a conversation he was having with Gon before their like fight in Heaven's Arena, where like it'll end on a freeze frame of like Hisoka looking back like, haha, bitch, come fight me, to Gon as he walks away, like as this like musical crescendo happens. that are just super good and stick in the memory as like really great endings to a shonen episode that keep me engaged and wanting to like just sit down and binge it and just embrace like the this is some teenagers beating the fuck out of each other feel of shonen. Ta-da.
I will say that like freeze frame thing you're talking about, you know what show did that really well that you just made me remember? It is like offensive to compare this to Hunter x Hunter.
Bo totally did that super well. You're right. Oh my god.
Oh, that's an anime you should watch if you haven't. That shit is great.
Bobobo is so fucking good.
In fact, just skip to like the Jelly Jiggler episodes.
Oh my. We're drinking and watching Bobobo one of these days. I swear we have to do it. We can't not. But that,
like I don't. Bobobo is nearly, I won't say on the level, but nearly on the level of like Gintama for comedy.
It's fucking funny. I think Bobobo is hilarious. I'm not even gonna tell you. Just go Google the plot conceit of Bobobo. We don't have time. Take your last wait question. Is your last one more Gundam, or am I about to lose a fight with you? Because I'm gonna start one and then get my ass beat.
So my two honorable mentions from my list of seven that will not be being talked about are Prince of Tennis Ending 2, Keep Your Style.
Good ending.
In all caps.
Good ending.
Good ending for a mid-tier show that I still enjoy quite a bit. I really like Prince of Tennis.
Yeah, it's fun.
There should be more tennis manga / anime. And unfortunately, the other honorable mention is Orphans No Namida, Tears of Orphans from Iron Blood Orphans, because it's too good to be on this list.
I kept it off my list because I thought you were gonna talk about it. Look,
wait. it's too good. Just go if you're listening to this right now. Just pause. Go type in Iron Blood Orphans ending, Tears of Orphans, Orphans No Namida, or Orphans No Namida MISIA, because the music video is also really good.
Okay, wait. People were paying attention earlier. This is the series I was talking about that I thought might be on the list. So there's a moment with a character death where this is the end. I'm not spoiling. The first 13 episodes use this ending.
Are you talking about like in the jungle?
Yes.
On the beach?
Yes. Okay. So in the first 13 episodes use this ending and it's fucking depressing and it's so good. Holy shit. Just go listen to it. You're welcome. And then the second ending happens, you know, like 14 through 25 or whatever. But a character dies, like a main character who's been there since episode 1 and like episode 18 or something. And they bring back Orphans No Namida to be the ending for that episode. And it plays his death and everyone's reaction to it. The visuals of that over the music of the song, and it ripped my fucking heart out. That was the example.
It lingers for like 2.5-3 minutes.
Oh,
it almost plays the whole song.
That scene alone is worth watching the entirety of the first season of Iron Blooded Orphans, like completely, because of the use of Orphans No Namida. It's fine. Do your actual ending one. I just had to say that because I talked about it an hour ago.
Yeah, no, great ending. Instead, what we're going to talk about is an equally as good ending that might be way worse music. In fact, it is way worse music than Orphans No Namida.
Okay.
Welcome to the NHK's Adora Aka-chan Ningen,
Let's
Dancing Baby
go.
Human.
Oh my god, this song makes me want to cry.
So, Dancing Baby Human, where do you even start? It is not sung. It is yelled. Screamed. Is screamed into the microphone. As it sings about, don't you wish you were a baby because everyone cares about you when you're a baby and you don't even have to do anything. And then you grow up and no one cares anymore.
Oh my god. So
it's so depressing. And Welcome to the NHK is a depressing show about what to do, not even healthily, just what to do once you've withdrawn from society, you have nowhere else to go, you don't trust people, and you don't feel loved or seen by anyone. And this ending is perfect thematically and in tone, mind you.
Anyone who follows us on Twitter for a long period of time will know that I watched the first half of Welcome to the NHK in like September, and that I cried after watching the first episode, and Xavier had to take me to Waffle House.
All the while I was laughing like a madman, because my exact words were, hey Trey, let's watch NHK, and you were like, what's that? And I was like,
he's like, I've seen people finish episode one and like call their friends and apologize. And I was like, what? And it's like, or just cry. And then at the end of episode one, I was sitting there with the guy who, like, my roommate and Xavier, and I was just fucking crying. It was, oh my God. But yeah, this ending hits like a truck.
I remember I told you we can't leave yet. You've got to watch the ending. And I made sure to grab a video that had the translated ending on the end.
That was a quiet ass ride to that Waffle House, bro.
Again, complete side story, departure from what we're supposed to be doing. I'll never forget, you watched the opening scene, and you did not get it. You were like, what is this?
I watched the opening scene, I was like, I don't understand. And then in the second scene, there's a man laying in a bed, and he says the words, how could someone like sleep and do nothing for 16 hours and still be so tired? And I remember Andrew, the roommate, looked over at me and was like, are you good? Are you okay? Holy shit. NHK is an incredible series that I'll probably be finishing once I finish my rewatch of Evangelion. And this ending is, you can watch the ending without watching NHK. It still fucking hurts.
Yeah.
And it is screamed by a very small, funny purple man.
Yeah, but there's a small purple man. This is my other fun fact about this ending. There's a small purple NHK alien that is completely the main character's imagination, because he believes that there is a organization that basically has tuned the world to turn him into a Hegekomori, which is to say a Japanese shut-in.
Yeah,
And it's called the NHK, which is also kind of a funny pun, because NHK is basically the TV, or the national TV service in Japan.
But it's also like Nihon Hikikomori Kyokai, and it's like a whole yeah. I will say the visuals are great. I like Satō smoking the cigarette. I like the purple man dancing around. I like...
Oh, that was my fun fact. I, for some reason, and I did this to Trey as he was crying watching this opening in terror as he read the lyrics. For some reason, I know this entire dance.
Oh, yeah, no, he knows the dance. He did, like, a couple seconds of it, and I was like, you're going to stop right now. But I will say, I also like how it has, like, the appliances that are in his... that talk to him, you know, and they're a part of the ending... because I can imagine this ending just being like a Satō internal dialogue, like with himself, you know?
Absolutely.
It's some sad shit. Go watch it. Oh my God.
Also, with some of the moments that happen in NHK, to hear this ending after, it's just like, oh shit.
Oh God.
Spoiler warning for the next 5 minutes, right? Maybe two and a half.
I've only watched half the series. Wait.
No, this is a part you've seen.
Okay.
The one where Sato's mom visits.
Oh God.
So the spoiler warning for the next 2 or 3 minutes. Sato's mom visits, and he tries to pretend to not be a shut-in because he's dropped out of college and he doesn't have a job and he hasn't told his parents at all. So he gets his friends to help him pretend that he's not a shut-in. And he goes to the bathroom while they're out to eat. And his mom basically says, it's okay, I know, he's a good boy and he's trying to do the right thing, but I can tell... that there is something very, very wrong with Satō, and he feels like a failure.
She, like, literally... because Satō brings a woman as, like, a fake girlfriend to this dinner date with his mother. And she's like, you're not really dating, are you? You're acting. And she's like, yeah. And the mom's like, well, Satō just... he wants me to be happy and proud of him. And, he's doing what he can, and I love him. And Satō overhears it and just goes and literally says, oh God, I'm a piece of shit. And then goes down to the table and continues everything. And then, like, the episode ends 2 minutes later. And oh my God.
And that's, like, your ending thought, as you're like, don't you just wish you were a baby again, man?
Oh my God. Yeah, no. Oh my, what a good fucking show. That's all. Don't you wish you were a baby again? Easy life.
Yes, ironically, yes. When you know when people ask that question, that's like, would you go back in time and restart your life with all the knowledge you have? Yes, I would absolutely isekai my real life.
Oh, it'd be so good. That would be some hilarious shit. But yeah. So that's your last one, right?
Yeah.
Okay. We're at 1 hour and 29 minutes, but I don't care. We need to talk about the best anime ending of all time. I say that not as an exaggeration. I do think this is probably the best anime ending of all time. It is my personal favorite. The Seatbelts and Yoko Kanno, the Real Folk Blues from Cowboy Bebop. I think the best way to explain this is that it's just like perfect for Bebop. It's a perfect piece of music. The visuals are perfect. How it fits the themes and tone of Cowboy Bebop is perfect. I've listened to this song so many times. Every fucking time I get goosebumps. I've listened to various covers of this song. Every time I get goosebumps. Less than a year ago, maybe seven to 10 months ago, about they released like a 7-minute version of this song where they got Yoko Kanno and the Seatbelts back, and they got people to rap over the beat, and they got a bunch of famous musicians to sing it, and they got the fucking Steve Blum to come back and do Spike's fucking voice for this thing, and they had other voice actors come back. And this like 7-minute version of the Real Folk Blues, I literally sent it to you and was like, I'm actually crying. I just sat there and I cried, and it was so good because Bebop is such an important thing and the Real Folk Blues is such an important part of Bebop. I literally don't think I can talking about it do it justice, how fucking good it is. But I was like re-listening to this song earlier today, and I saw a video that was like, it was Digi's fucking like 60 best animatings of all time. This is also Digi's number one, as I found out.
Yeah.
And Digi talks about how when she was in middle school, she didn't like the Pledge of Allegiance because she had already seen a bunch of problems in America and was like, I'm going to pick my own Pledge of Allegiance. And every morning, like on the school bus riding to her middle and high school, she would time the drive so that she knew exactly when to start singing it, and she would sing to herself in her brain at like 12, 13 years old, the entirety of the Real Folk Blues in a way that she'd finish the song right as she was getting off the bus for school every day for like years, because it's that kind of song where like knowing this song to her was like pledging her allegiance to life, existence, anime, and being a better person. And like, that's more praise than I could ever give this fucking song. I think it's perfect.
I mean, I don't know if I would call it the best ending I've ever heard, right? Because I can't remember every ending I've ever heard.
No, nor can I. This is just the favorite of, after spending like a day thinking, this is my favorite.
Yeah, no, it definitely breaks top five. I think it's hard for me to place it, replace what's great about it, because it's attached to Bebop. And Bebop is damn near perfect. Like, it's one of the anime that gets as close to perfect as you can.
Yeah.
Right?
I agree. We've talked about this a lot.
You mean like that time you tried to compare Bebop directing to Kill la Kill directing?
Yeah, I was
like, what the fuck are you talking about?
It was years ago. I was stupid. I actually meant editing, which editing-wise, I think they are relatively comparable, and I stand by that take, even though I think Bebop is vastly better than Kill la Kill.
Anyway, but you know, I just think this is another element in like, this could not be done better. This, it doesn't just fit, like, it is perfect. Tailor-made.
Well, that's how I feel, you know, about I mean? Music for Bebop, right? Like, I think Yoko Kanno, Yoko Kanno got the Seatbelts together as a band to make the jazz soundtrack for Bebop. That was, like, how she formed them. She's like, I'm handpicking a band to make music for this thing for Watanabe, and everything they made is incredibly good and feels so perfect when used in Bebop, and this feels like the magnum opus that the group was able to produce musically. And that's not to disrespect like any of the other songs on the soundtrack, because it's not even on Apple Music, and I don't have Spotify because I tricked my family into paying for family Apple Music. But someone gave me like an iTunes gift card for like $15 one time, and I already knew. I was like, oh, it's not on Apple Music, but it is on the iTunes store. And I instantly bought the Bebop soundtrack because I couldn't listen to the Real Folk Blues, like the original version of it, on my fucking phone, and I was mad about it. I spent $15 just to listen to this song like as it was intended,
as you should.
It's just so good. If you're here and you haven't seen Bebop and you haven't listened to this song, please stop listening to our show, because we'll be here when you get back from binge watching Cowboy Bebop. That's it. Like, you need to see this.
I won't be here when you get back from binge watching Cowboy Bebop. I'll be in space, cowboy.
Oh no. But yeah, this series means a lot to a lot of people for a lot of different reasons. And this, like Fly Me to the Moon at the start, was the other series I was talking about when I talked about pieces of music that fit really well in a way that makes you think about what you just watched. That's what this is, and Fly Me to the Moon is, to me, is a piece that complements the series in a way that, like, supports reflection over the experience of watching the series.
Yeah, I totally agree.
That's it. That was the thing that, like, I had.
You took the easy way out by picking the good opening. No, I'm kidding.
Hey. Kinda. I don't know. Yeah, I picked my list by just going through a bunch of stuff on, like, my MAL and, like, anime list and being like, here's things that I think show off a variety of good endings from a variety of different perspectives and reasons endings can be good.
Imagine having more than one thing on your MAL.
is it Battle Beatemon?
Yeah, it's Battle Beatemon that gave it a 10.
I always forget if it's Battle Beatemon or Metabots, because you joked about making it one of those two back when you made your MAL or on the fucking phone. But
yeah. This is the perfect anime, Battle Beatemon. Fuck Cowboy Bebop. If you haven't watched Battle Beatemon, go get on.
I'm now imagining a meme in my head where it's like, if you haven't read the manga, don't talk to me about the anime. And the anime is Cowboy Bebop, and the manga is just the anime of Battle Beatemon. Don't talk to me about the movie if you haven't read the book. And the book is just... Okay. Yeah. Do you have anything else you want to say about openings before we get to our ending? We're already at like an hour 36. When you cut it down, it's going to be like an hour 35. But I feel like...
I was about to say, no, we're good. Also, it's what our ending says about our endings. God, fuck.
Oh, shit. You're right.
I've also made that mistake, I'm sure.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's hard to keep your words straight, especially when it's like 1:30 in the morning. Yeah, I feel like we covered a lot of ground, a lot of different directions. Anime endings are dope, and people who like anime endings are dope. Yeah, do you want to say any loving messages before I hit mine up and we end this off and send people on for a great weekend?
Thank you to the single moms. Thank you to the taken moms. Thank you to the married moms. Thank you to the moms whose boyfriends, husbands, and other significant others and partners are in jail right now. You know, we just had the holidays pass. Thank you to Femboy Santa. Thank you to Normal Santa, who I will be referring to as Bear Santa. Thank you to Divinity Poppy, otherwise known as GXD, God. Which is not to say that God is male. Divinity Poppy is God's Twitter handle. We all know that God is a they, them.
Obviously.
As a primordial spiritual essence.
Of course.
Thank you to the rappers, the trappers, the mixtape in the backyard. Thank you to the dogs and the strays, the pound, and in homes. Thank you to the warrior cats, the whelps, and the kitty pets. Shout out to Thunderpath. Shout out to the two leg houses. Shout out to Gundam pilots, new types, coordinators, innovades, and innovators.
Okay.
Shout out to comic book artists. Shout out to comic book writers. Shout out to comic book colorists. Shout out to comic book inkers. Shout out Stan Lee, gone before his time. His birthday passed recently. Shout out to Robert Downey Jr. Shout out to David Favreau. Shout out to Ikki Tosin. Shout out to Evanito. Not that you will ever hear this.
Just Evanito specifically?
Just Evanito specifically.
Fuck the rest of Annie Cube, obviously.
Fuck you, Kanye. Shout out to JPEG Mafia. And I think we're good. Those are my thank yous for the episode.
Okay. It's hard to follow.
That's our TikTok where that's just that, instead of the like good night to the lesbians, good night moon like that. It's yeah. Just shout outs.
Thank you to the lesbians. Shout out to the they them. But yeah. First of all, thank you, our listeners, for spending this Saturday morning with us. Yeah, by the time this airs, it will be 2021, because this Friday's New Year's Day, right? Ta-da! I can brain calendar. I hope the holidays went well for everybody listening, and if they didn't, that's okay. Sometimes life doesn't go well, but all we can do is react to it and do what we can to, I don't know, love others and continue to do our thing. I wish all of you the best of luck going into the new year. I hope anyone listening to this will at me on Twitter with their favorite Christmas gift that they got, or gift of other holiday and tradition, or lack thereof of a gift. Just at me on Twitter. And thank you to the TI-84 calculator. Thank you to folk punk artists that aren't bad people. Thank you to that one cool Irish punk song that I found on TikTok recently that makes me very happy. You already got the
Trappers. Once again, fuck you, Kanye.
You already got the Trappers. Shit. Thank you to everyone who is just vibing out right now, you know? Thank you to companies that donate to certain charities, you know? Thank you to all the cool books that exist. And I hope everyone is ready for 2021 to sure be a year, because that's what it's looking like. I'd thank more people, but Xavier already covered the Trappers, and thus most of the human race is already thanked, you know? And yeah, I hope to see you guys next week. Have a great week. Have a great weekend. We here at the Saturday Morning Anime Podcast team have faith in you. We hope you have faith in us, and have a great Saturday.
Did you just make a goddamn folk punk reference off the end of this podcast?
So what if I did?
Good night, everyone. I'm sorry. Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Trappers, Rappers. Fuck you, Kanye. Good morning, JPEG Mafia. Good morning, audience. Have a good day.